have on the agenda this morning the consideration of the strategic plan and the budget vote of the Department of Social Development for the 2013-2014 financial year. Secretary, any apologies?
Yes, Chairperson, there are a couple of apologies. One is from the Deputy Minister, who indicated that she won't be able to attend today's meeting due to a meeting schedule for the Cabinet on social protection. So his schedule at the same time as our meeting. Another one is from the Whip of the Committee, Honourable Chwete, who is unable to be with us today. She's attended a Southern Africa Resource Barometer Parliamentary Forum workshop in Harare. It started yesterday until the 25th. Another one is from Honourable Kaba, who is also a member of the Social Portfolio Committee on Rural Development. She is attending that meeting because they are processing a bill. One is from Honourable Ngubeni Maluleka, who is unable to be with us due to illness. So those are the apologies I've received. Thank you, Chairperson.
Told me that the minister will be joining us later. She's also held up in the committee meeting. Honourable Waters?
So I'm just concerned, do we have a quorum? Are we not approving the budget today?
We're not approving any budgets today. We're just having the briefing session. So we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 members here. So we can still continue with the meeting. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Can we proceed with the item on the agenda? And I'll be giving over to the acting DG of the department. Should I call you the acting DG? Since the acting DG is in New York, attending to matters concerning the United Nations and South Africa. On population issues. So, population development issues. So, without wasting any more time, I'll give over to the acting teacher.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to the rest of the committee. This label of acting DG seems to be going around with me for the past year or so now. We have prepared a presentation as requested by the committee, and Mr. Roger Sajoya, who is responsible for strategy in the department, is going to be leading us on the discussions. And we have here also the Chief Executive Officer from the National Development Agency to contribute in whatever aspect of our strat plan and annual performance plan may be needed, and also the Chief Executive Officer of the National Development Agency, including from Social Development, Acting Deputy Director General, responsible for integrated development, and the Acting CFO, and I have also the Acting DDG from Comprehensive Social Security, as well as Mr. Masilela, who's responsible for our entities oversight. So that's the delegation from the department, as well as Ms. Connie Mumalo, who's our Acting DDG Social Welfare Services, and we are here to support the committee with whatever questions that they may have. Yeah. I'll hand over to, if you allow, Chair, to Mr. Tajoya to lead us on the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Members, Senior Executives from the two entities, and management from the department. I'm pleased to be here this morning after a week of robust engagement with the committee on the strategic planning session that was held here in Cape Town, particularly because it has given us an opportunity to provide context to the presentation today. So you would notice that the angle that I'll take today is just to zoom down now into specific details in terms of what's in the APP so that the committee is able to hold us accountable. Part one will be presented by myself, and I'll be assisted by Johnny, who is our acting CFO. It will cover the strategic overview, annual performance plan, and performance expenditure trends. And part B would be about budget overview and allocation. Just to introduce the topic is to present to the portfolio committee the overview of the department that encompasses the vision, the mission, and the mandate and strategic priorities. As I've indicated, I'll touch on the strategic goals, objectives, high-level outputs, performance indicators, and annual targets, provide detailed budget to support the implementation thereof. As I indicated, the presentation proceeds from the context as sketched last week. I have added just a few slides, members, maybe just to get upfront apology. In my discussion with the chair, I just brought in the program one, which I did not want to go to details. I selected some few programs there that I think are important. And just maybe two more slides around the strategic goals and priorities, just to refresh your minds. These are the things that I've shared with you already last week, but just to take you back again. The vision of the Department of Social Development is to build a caring and integrated system of social development systems that facilitate human development and improve the quality of life. I must say that that picture was very deliberate from my side, because we envision a society where kids can play freely, you know, where they can play in safer spaces, where they can play and receive guidance from families, from communities. We believe that when those systems come together, we would have actually achieved a great deal towards, you know, facilitating human development. So I thought for a change, let me just visualize a bit of what our vision is all about. So it starts with kids to form human capital for the country. The mission is to ensure the provision of comprehensive, integrated, sustainable, and quality social development services, and would also want to create an enabling environment for sustainable development in partnership with all those who are committed to work in building a caring society. The slide that I've added around the goals is there in the book. Our goals for medium term are as follows, is to reduce income poverty by providing social assistance to eligible individuals, increase household food and nutrition security, improve service delivery by standardizing social welfare services. So here we're focusing on quality issues. Prevent new HIV infections, address the structural and social drivers of HIV and tuberculosis, and mitigate the impact of those diseases. Create an enabling and conducive environment within which NPOs can operate, improve the quality of and access to ECD services, strengthen child protection services through the implementation of childcare, and protection measures, in particularly the Children's Act, is a major driver in terms of strategic intervention. Reduce the demand for illegal and addictive substances within communities. So we work largely from a demand side, but working with other sectors of government that tackle the supply side, especially the law enforcement agencies. Facilitate social change and sustainable development, targeting youth, adults in their within the communities. Create an enabling environment for the protection and promotion of older persons' rights and people with disability. And lastly, strengthening the families. You see that it's quite mouthful, but what we've decided to do is to give prominence to certain areas based on these broader goals. The prominence is given to early childhood development for a good reason, that it's not only the department that is putting this on top of its priority list. It forms part of government priority, which links to education, but also Chapter 9 in the NDP speaks very strongly about ECD. We also have prioritized child care and protection services, and this also has a particular context, given the current challenges that our children face, particularly around issues of abuse and protection. So we're taking a closer focus to that, as well as youth development. Combat substance abuse is also meant to respond to the current challenges that we have, promote and protect older persons and people with disabilities, food and nutrition security. Whilst those are lifted up, we strongly believe that social security, including job creation, remains a key catalyst to these particular priorities, but also just to make sure that we are able to deliver. We have prioritized the support to NPOs. We're looking at issues of infrastructure development, particularly working closely with our provincial counterparts, customer care, and appropriate service delivery models that would enable delivery of DSD services. I'll now just transit to program performance, the details on the APP, and I'll start with program one. And this is the few slides that I've included at the advice of the chair. The first program that I've selected was the strategic and risk and business processes. Its objective or the outcome there is to improve social development sector planning. And under this particular program, we're looking at integrated service delivery model for social development sector because we believe that it's very important that we sharpen the way that we deliver the services. I think the discussion that you might have had last week about the role of national, province, and local, I think it fits in with this particular slide. But also of concern is the issue of target setting that we have witnessed as we work closely with provinces. We are committing to produce a target setting framework that would assist provinces to target better in relation to the population and the demand. And we continue to also work on the area of risk. The other objective that we have around this is to transform the social infrastructure portfolio in support of service delivery through our infrastructure unit. We would want to come up with infrastructure spatial optimization model. So this, in simple terms, we want to map all our facilities across the country so we know where the ECD is located, the proximity of ECD to other facilities so that we can actually force the integration, but also where it's not desirable to have an ECD, we can actually advise accordingly. But also this would estimate in terms of access to services that we are able to provide. Also, we're looking at improving the outlook or the look and feel of our offices. We're committing to facilitate the improvement of about 25 social development sector offices across provinces, but also want to train 540 officials on cultural reform program as part of, improving how we interact with the citizens in particular. I will perhaps just skip some of those, go to other slides. On communication, the objective is to improve public access to DSD information and services. So we're focusing on this particularly because we of the view that maybe we're not communicating effectively. We may not be reaching South Africans that are hard to reach. So we're also segmenting how we want to communicate. We are quite aware that a number of young people are on the social media. So you'd notice that we're planning to reach about 55,000 people via DSD websites and other social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, and others. So and WhatsApp. We're getting into that particular space. But also for people who do not have access to such, would use the conventional platforms such as the radios and print media. So we also intend to reach about 25 million people through marketing and advertising initiatives. And we also want to produce DSD newsletters where we're able to share the good work that we're actually doing on the ground. Minister and the Deputy Minister would continue to engage with the public. This year we're planning about 16, such engagement for the Minister and 16 for the Deputy Minister. So just an attempt to reach our public. As for the entity oversight, the targets that are set for 2013-14 is to implement public entities oversight and management strategy. So this is fostering, it's encouraging working together with our entities, monitor the implementation of the performance using the scorecard, I think those are the two critical things that are coming through there. And lastly, on the program one is to focus on monitoring and evaluation. And they would want to look at updating social development M&E system produced by annual service delivery monitoring reports within the prescribed time frames, produce institutional performance reports, produce social profile of vulnerable groups, which would assist in terms of planning, but also want to start evaluating our program. So we'll develop the multi-year evaluation strategic plan to evaluate the effectiveness of our program. I'm going to now move to program two, which I think your presentation starts from in the main. Program two is our social security, starting with social assistance. The objective is to reduce poverty by providing income support to eligible individuals. Here, if you look at the targets in terms of the grants, old age grants and child support grants remain the biggest grants in relative to the rest of the grants. Child support grant and older persons grant make up the bulk of the expenditure for that particular reason. But also this signals government support and commitment to provide support to vulnerable members of our society, namely children, elderly, and the disabled. The number of social grant beneficiaries increased from 15.2 million in March to 15.9 by 31st December 2012, but is actually projected to increase to 17.2 million by the end of March 2016. Spending increased significantly from 2009 to 2012, mainly due to the extension of the age limit for the child support grant within the social security environment and the age equalization for the older persons grant. If I could go to program three, which looks at the policy issues around social security. The objective that we set for ourselves is to create an effective and efficient social security system, and particularly the target for 2013-14 is to produce four oversight reports on adherence to norms and standards for social assistance programs. So we would want to begin to play that monitoring role more and more. We'll also produce annual survey report on social assistance services, which I think will assist the committee in terms of the oversight that you have to play, but also be sharing a lot of information as it relates to social budgeting, the financing of social services, but starting with social security, both in public and private sector. So this is some of the reviews and bulletins I'll be introducing and sharing the information around social security at large. On the appeals, the target is to adjudicate 50% of appeals within 90 days of receipt, but also to introduce some of the information systems to support that particular environment. With respect to the inspectorate, I would want to have a policy approved for the social security inspection by 2013-14. Some of the performance and expenditure trends around the space is that expenditure on appeals adjudication will also increase as we speed up the number of appeals adjudicated within 90 days, and is expected to up to about 65% by 2015-16. Going to Program 4, which is in size terms is one of the biggest programs, so I'll spend quite some time around here. The objective is to improve the delivery of social welfare services, and the kinds of things that we're looking at here is the implementation of the social welfare service framework, but we're also embarking on a very critical process, which is the review of the white paper on social services. And this year we'll be starting some work in at least two provinces where we would be piloting the study, and by next year we're most likely to cover all the provinces in as far as the review is concerned. We will also monitor the implementation of generic intervention processes in provinces, some of the initiatives that we have around welfare services, award 800 scholarships to social work students, raising it to about 5.5 thousand, which is actually moving from 4,750, which is our current baseline. We also would want to look at evaluating the scholarship program, and we're committing to produce a draft assessment report for the scholarship program. Develop a regulatory framework for social service practitioners by March 2016, and for 2013-14, we're committing ourselves to produce a draft bill for social service practitioners. But also, we also want to introduce an effective regulatory system for the funded NPOs. Here, the specific commitment is to monitor the implementation of the policy on financial awards, which basically supports the NPOs. Older persons, the objective is to create an enabling environment for the protection and promotion of rights of older persons. We will be looking at community-based care services across provinces, and the idea here is to assess compliance in terms of norms and standards for about 90 of those community-based care services, 10 per province. And we also will be looking at 108 residential care facilities assessed for compliance in terms of norms and standards. And there's a draft bill on older persons that is being highlighted as well. Draft bill on social development services to people with disability, norms and standards for residential facilities for areas where we have people with disabilities. So that speaks to the priority on the disability side. Children, we're starting with the ECD. We have presented last week that we have a broader plan around ECD, 10-point plan. It's going to unfold over a number of years. But for this particular year, by 2013-14, the focus would be on developing the policy for ECD, that country strategy around ECD, following the review by the DME and the conference that we've actually had. But also specific deliverable would relate to comprehensive package on ECD services, areas around human resources capacity for the ECDs, so the issues of practitioners and the issues of curriculum will be actually dealt with. But we're currently busy with the audit as well of about 18,000 ECDs. We've already done about 5,487, so we'll be concluding the balance during the course of this year. We'll strengthen the protection services through the implementation of childcare and protection measures by 2015. And here there are a number of initiatives that focus on child protection. For instance, we'll increase the number of children adopted by 10% when we begin to look at improving access to child care and protection through adoption services. Implementation of foster care project plan that we have. The plan is already fully developed, is being implemented by provinces. Our role right now is to monitor the implementation of foster care project plan in 9 provinces. We are able to share the details if the committee would want us to talk to that level. But also we'll monitor the implementation of the transformation plan of the child and youth care centers in 9 provinces. We'll be looking at issues of drop-in centers in terms of the Children's Act, approval of the guidelines to guide the registration of such centers. Screen 30,000 employees working with children against the Child Protection Register Part B. And there are amendments on the Children's Act that are currently being looked at as well. We will also monitor the implementation of the ECBND model in provinces. You'd remember we have introduced new cadre of social service professionals to reach out to vulnerable children and families. So the progress is moving well, and we will continue and implement that particular plan that is implemented by provinces. On families, we want to strengthen families by providing comprehensive social services, and here we're looking at number of stakeholders capacitated on white paper on families. So we're preparing the sector and our partners to implement the policy, particularly looking at issues of capacity building, creating awareness about the policy itself as well. Capacity building on fatherhood and active parenting program for teenagers. These are some of the aspects that we have prioritized around the family. On substance abuse, the idea is to reduce the demand for substances in communities by providing prevention and treatment services, and specific indicators would be to the implementation of the National Anti-Substance Abuse POA. So we'll monitor the implementation of this plan, which is being actioned by 9 provinces as we speak. Capacity building of 120 stakeholders on the prevention and treatment for substances, Substance Abuse Act, facilitate implementation of the social mobilization strategy by capacitating 90 service providers, also monitor the implementation of the new drug master plan, the National Drug Master Plan that has been approved. Social crime environment, here we want to reduce the incidence of social crime through programs, policies, and legislation. Also, the focus around capacity building, working with provinces and other stakeholders. We will support 63 quality assurance panel members on the policy framework on accreditation of diversion services, facilitate implementation of the policy framework on accreditation of diversion services, 120 stakeholders capacitated on social crime, monitor the implementation of the integrated social crime prevention strategy. Improve victim empowerment services through program policies as well. There's a draft bill on victim empowerment support that we're committing to. Monitor the implementation of gender-based violence prevention program. There is also a plan of action in this program that we have shared at some point, but we can continue to talk to you around it. Policy framework for accreditation of services and programs for victims of human trafficking. Develop intersectoral strategy for VEP programs. Develop the draft VEP M&E would be some of the things I'll be doing. On youth, the objective is to empower youth for sustainable development and change. And here we're looking at number of youth participating in dialogues that we've started already last year. We want to increase the number of youth participating in youth dialogues to 3,000 by 2013-14, and also youth participating in mobilization program to 2,500. We also would want to have 450 youth participating in skills development program, 1,200 youth participate in leadership camps, but also to sustain all these initiatives, we want to establish 3 provincial youth forums where various youth initiatives could find expression and continuity there. On HIV and AIDS, the objective is to develop and facilitate the implementation of social and behavioral change programs. Here we're looking at the number of issues. First, we would want to reach, we're looking at number of youth reached through social and behavioral change program as the indicator. And we currently are reaching about 500,000 youth and would want to continue to with the youth that are already registered in our programs. Number of youth trained as groundbreakers on social change and behavioral change programs. We'll be looking at training about 540 groundbreakers. And here we're working closely with Love Life, which is implementing most of these programs. Number of youth trained as impeachy to implement social behavioral change programs. We'll train about 2,700 of impeachies. Number of organizations trained to implement social behavioral change. Here we're looking at training about 450 organizations on social and behavioral change programs. number of community conversation on HIV/AIDS facilitated. We would want to have about 64 such conversations happening. Also mitigate, the other objective is to mitigate the psychosocial impact of HIV and AIDS and TB on targeted key population. Here we want to develop psychosocial guidelines, curriculum, and learner materials on the number of training service providers on psychosocial services. We're looking at 30 for such people being targeted. Number of organizations trained in PSS, it's about 100 organizations that we're targeting. Norms and standards for home and community-based care programs. We want to develop service norms and standards and monitoring tools to strengthen this particular environment. I must say to the members that we are quite upbeat with the current trends around HIV/AIDS, that the new infections have stabilized. I think in part it means that our behavioral change programs are actually working to a great extent. Strengthen community-based systems. Here we're looking at number of CBOs reporting in accordance with the community base, with MNE system that we've developed. So we are upping the number to 1,200 so that we understand what is happening on the ground and we're able to intervene on time. Number of CBOs trained on the management capacity building programs, we're targeting about 120. Number of officials trained on HIV/AIDS management programs. So these are really capacity that we're building to support the HIV/AIDS environment. But maybe last, but also important, is the evaluation report on HIV/AIDS program. Here we're looking at draft evaluation report of Love Life. I think there's been a talk about what has been the impact of this particular program. So we're finally coming down to that. But also the evaluation of our ACBC program would be particularly important to see how we're responding to the challenges that are faced on the ground. Some of the performance and expenditure trends: that most funds will continue to be disbursed to Love Life, enabling it to increase and extend its HIV/AIDS awareness programs. And on scholarship for social work students, we continue to work around that particular area. Expenditure, I think I'll maybe leave it at that. And go to the next program, which is the last program I'm covering, the social policy and integrated service delivery. On this one, I'll start with a special project which focuses on the social aspects around our EPWP program. The objective is to increase job opportunities, skills, and income levels in the social development sector, and the specific indicators, number of job opportunities created through the social development programs. We're looking at about 33,307 work opportunities created. We're looking at 3,199 full-time equivalent jobs created through the incentive grants. We're looking at 27,814 non-EPWP jobs created. On promoting community development or driven development, this particular program also carries, you know, flagship programs around, because it's a special project. So we'll be looking at issues of community works programs, so to facilitate the provision of integrated DSD services to non-community works program sites. Make sure that those sites that have been identified, DSD services, are provided in an integrated manner. We have started a Gwanda program where we gave opportunity to communities to showcase what they're doing around development, but also just to drive their own development. We want to expand that particular program. Nine new sites would be added to the current five. Also, we want to provide social protection services to military veterans. We've started with the psychosocial counseling, social relief of distress, and job-related targeting to military veterans. We'll be adding more services so that they're able to benefit from this. Registration and monitoring of the nonprofit organization. We are aiming to create an enabling environment for nonprofit organizations. Here, we're looking at processing 90% of applications within 2 months of receipt in terms of registration, adjudicate 80% of NPO appeals within 3 months where there are issues, approved policy for amending the NPO Act, dealing with some of the aspects that came during the NPO dialogues that we've actually had, trained 2,500 NPOs on governance and compliance with the NPO Act, trained 300 provincial officials on the management of the NPO sector. Community development, we're committing to support and monitor the implementation of community development services and programs. We want to train 600 community development practitioners, train 400 CBOs on community development practice, support the institutions of higher learning to align their curriculum with community development national qualification frameworks. We want to also continue profiling our households. The target here is about 300,000 households. And this data will be put into our National Integrated Social Information System, which then gets analyzed. Hopefully it can support provinces in terms of planning for the services on the ground. Want to reach 200 wards through mobilization programs that we have. Socioeconomic support to 450 change agents in targeted wards. So when we get into households during the profile, we identify young people and other champions on the ground there, and we support them to continue with community development beyond our intervention. We also have our community development occupation framework, which we continue to sharpen, facilitate the development of norms and standards for community development. We have before the MINMEX right now a policy framework on community development. I think it brings very exciting stuff. Amongst others, we're beginning to look at whether should we be using cooperatives as well as our community development approach and many other areas of integration with other sector departments. We'd also want to facilitate and monitor the implementation of food and security programs. Specifically here, we're looking at number of households accessing food and security programs. We want to target for 2013-14 about 300,000 households that would be benefiting. Through our food banks, we were at the region of 300. We're kind of doubling that number to about 700,000 people accessing food through our food banks. So this is in support of the priority around food security. And as such, the spending on community development will also increase significantly due to an additional allocation of 120 million to Food Bank South Africa, aimed at strengthening the Food for All program that the department is targeting. Let me just go to part B, which is about finances.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm going to cover the part B of the presentation, which is basically the financial outlook over the MTF to support the strategic objectives and the various targets as presented by the Chief Director of Strategy. The first slide is basically showing the changes, the major changes to the baseline over the MTF. And also the areas where there have been major adjustments to the baseline, including additional allocations that the department has actually been provided. The baseline for the entire year, as indicated there, was about 120 million in the 2013-14 financial year, and increasing over the MTF. And then there were additional funds that were allocated to the baseline, which is actually threefold, improvement in the conditions of service for the department, and then also for social grants, only kicking in the 2015-16 financial year, is the additional allocation of 1.9 billion relating to the expected increase in the number of beneficiaries based on the projected calculations that SASA has indicated. And Then there have been, as the previous president has indicated, allocation to Food Bank South Africa for the provision of food relief and the establishment of the Food for All program, 30, 40, 50 over the MTF. And then the adjustments to that, to the baseline allocations, basically made up of the following. The budget was basically reduced on the transfers and subsidies by 441, and then you know increasing to 823 million, and then 380 over the MTF, and that's made up of basically reduction in the allocation to the NDA on the administration, 1.8 million, and then SASA, or 115 million. And then also there has been a reduction from the SASA admin budget, you know, to fund the fraud hotline function shift, which was shifted to the Public Service Commission over the MTF. And then there has been a reduction to the allocation to you know from SASA, which basically went for the absorption of social work graduates. And then an additional amount of 20 million over the 2013-14 financial year of was also reduced from the scholarship social work scholarships, and then also it went towards the absorption of social work graduates. It should be noted that the two amounts, 100 million from SASA and then 20 million from the department, actually went to the provinces. It was allocated to the provinces for them to absorb the social work graduates. And then the last one was basically the reduction in terms of the allocation to social assistance grants. For the department, goods and services was actually reduced from 9.8 million, increasing over to 20 million, 31 million over the MTF because of the efficiency savings that all departments and agencies were requested to identify, 1%, 2%, 3% from the National Treasury. So the MTF allocations, which are also included in the E&E of the department, is basically 120 billion, increasing over to 137 billion over the MTF. Now the earmarked allocations that are included there in the allocations over the MTF include the SASA admin budget of 6.3 billion, and then also fraud investigations. The fraud investigations of 70 million, increasing over the MTF, and then also social assistance grants 113 billion. The ECD audit, as Rogers has alluded to, we received a allocation of 24 million in the 2012-13 financial year, and then the additional allocation is for the 2013-14 financial year, and it's expected to conclude in the current financial year. Now, the social work scholarship has been reduced accordingly through that reprioritization to the absorption of social workers, but the allocation over the MTF starting from 250 million to 276. And then the establishment of the inspectorate, 14, food bank, as indicated, 30 in the first year, and then a national development agency, and as well as Love Life. And then this one is just a graphical presentation of the percentage increase. As you can see, there has been a marginal increase in the budget that has been allocated, decreasing over the MTF, you know, from 7.6, 7.2, 6.4. And then allocation per program, is as follows. Program 1 for 2013-14, 264, 113 for social assistance, and then the social security and administration, 6.4, welfare services, 513, and then the social policy and integrated development, 289. And then total, which is also reconciling to the previous figure indicated, 120.7 billion. Allocations per sub-program, and starting first with the social security policy and administration, it's actually broken up into the following. And this is also aligned to the E&E figures as presented. Social security policy development, 56 million, appeals adjudication, 45. Social grants admin budget, that is transferred to SASA for the admin cost, 6.2. And then social grant fraud investigations, 70. Then program implementation within that program, 5 million. And then for welfare services, the same breakdown was actually indicated there for over the MTF. Service standards, 25. Okay. Okay, and then those are the sub-programs within the welfare services, you know. And what I needed to highlight there is basically the children. Under children, you will see a major drop in the figures there. That's because of the ECD audit. In the previous year, we were allocated 24, and it's gone down to 16. And then that's basically the reason for that reduction under children because of the ECD audit. But overall, you know, for that area in welfare services, it's 513 million in the first year that is covered over the MTF. And then for social policy and integrated service delivery, community development, just an increase there of about 20 million. That's because of the food bank in the first year allocation for the Food for All program, and then the various other sub-program amounts. And then you will notice that there has in some sub-programs there has been a decrease. If you look at the adjusted appropriation for 2012-13 to 2013-14, that's because of that efficiency savings that we expected to actually have, you know, of 1%, 2%, 3%. Over the MTF, there's been 60 million that we had to indicate the savings for representation processes over, you know, in the various government departments. And then allocation per economic classification is basically as follows: compensation of employees, say 340 million in the first year over the MTF, and then goods and services 297. Also a reduction accordingly from 319 million of about 20 million. And then transfer subsidies, 120. Payments for capital assets also reduced slightly because of that efficiency saving exercise. And then details of the transfers that we have, these are the key transfers. I haven't listed all of the transfers, but the major ones are here. The first one being social assistance transfers, 113 million. And then social assistance, billion years. Sorry, yeah, it's billion. That's for the social assistance grants, billion. And then SASA, 6.3 billion. Social work scholarship, 250 million. And then National Development Agency, Food Bank, National Councils as well. And then the operational budget allocations on, you know, for the MTF period. Just a graphical presentation of that. This excludes major transfers that the department has, and it's basically for the 2013-14 financial year, 600. It has increased from the prior year by 1.9% to 652 million in the department, and increasing proportionally accordingly. And then operational allocations per, we look at the per program and also per economic classification. That 652 million is actually broken up into the following: Program 1 Administration, 264, and then Social Security Policy Administration, 106, then Welfare Services, 193, then the last one, Social Policy Integrated Service Delivery, 88, and then pay economic classification is basically 340 for compensation of employees. And then it should be noted that the big jump from 307 to 340 was necessitated by the fact that there's a new organizational structure in the department. So there was money allocated according to fund some of the prioritized posts that have been identified. Goods and services has decreased also from 319 to 297. Transfers, subsidies, 7.5 million. Payments, capital assets. This is just a pie chart showing the proportion allocation per program, with Program 1 admin 40% total allocation, Program 2, Program 3, Social Security Policy 17%, Social Welfare, and then Welfare Services 30%, and then Social Integrated Development 13%. This is just for the only operational budget, looking at also the pie chart, compensation of employees constituting 52% of the allocation, capital assets, 1%, transfers, 1%, goods and services, 46%. Thank you very much.
Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Not really at this stage, Chair. We'll just contribute as the discussions unfold.
Acting CFO, just switch off his mic, please. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. We're going to straight into questions. I'll give over to the honourable members. Any questions? If I look at the Kwanda program and the food bank program, I think it's that the committee should actually get a detailed briefing on those two programs, especially how it links to your food security and where it's being brought. It's very important because if I look at the amount of money, it's quite substantial. So I think we should get the detailed presentation on those two matters. Also in terms of Kwanda, especially with your site mapping, where it's being, I think it was on television, where, I don't know whether it was 2009 or 2010. I know there was a program, it was quite interesting. See how communities actually resolve community development challenges themselves. So I think we need to have a presentation on those two issues. I've noticed Honourable Mori, Honourable Waters, Honourable Kumala, Honourable Kuba, Honourable Pula. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the budget presentation, the financial outlook, slide 7. Social crime prevention and victim empowerment. I know that department, DSD, Department of Health, and other departments are members participating in the victim empowerment management team. And on an annual basis, the member departments are supposed to submit a report to Parliament on the implementation of the Sexual Offence Act. And I know to date that the department has not done so in terms of submitting its report. So I would like to know the link between this social crime prevention and victim empowerment, and maybe before the link, just to know the reasons why the department has not complied in terms of the reports that need to be submitted to Parliament. And secondly, yeah, the link, and how is it going to function in terms of the 39 million that has been allocated to that? Because for me, if you don't submit a report, then it means you're not doing it. Something is not happening. And why do you put a financial allocation in terms of budget to that if there's no report at the end of the day? So if the department can just explain that. And on the first presentation, I can't see the page now. There's too many pages. Anyway, the speaker spoke to developing or establishing youth programs in three provinces, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, which provinces are those? And, yeah, just give us more information on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Just on slide 7 of the financials, it's quite concerning that a number of sub-programs allocations have been reduced. And I understand, the reduction in children. That was because of the high allocation for ECD assessments. But if you look at, for example, older persons, it goes from 15 million to 10 million. So that's a reduction of about a third of the budget. If you look at youth, it goes down from 9.3 to 6.6, which is about a 30% reduction. And if you look at substance abuse, that also has a reduction of about 2 million or so, which is, and given the importance of substance abuse as well and the importance that's placed on it on page 10 of the report, one wonders what are the justifications for those reductions, first of all, and what implication will that have on service delivery in these particular aspects? And what's the implication to NGOs and specifically that are rendering services for these sub-programs. And then if you go to page 8 of the financials, where it says registration and monitoring of NPOs, which is a very important aspect, it reduces by just over 3 million rand as well, from 22.9, say 23 to 19.3. Now, this last year we had a, there was a big hoo-ha with regards to the deregistration of thousands, or potential deregistration, let me say, potential deregistration of thousands and thousands of NPOs because of lack of information, etc. And the fact is, if we're not monitoring and registering NPOs properly, how do we expect them to fulfill, firstly, their functions, and how do we want to ensure that there's a seamless registration process going on if we're reducing the money allocated to them for this, that particular issue? So if you could just explain that. Then if you look at the annual performance plan, that's what I'm going to be referring to now, Chair. If you look at the organogram on the first page, I mean, if you look, as opposed to last year's was full of everyone's names, quite frankly. Right? Every position had a name. This year, there's not one person's name here. And that's because, I suppose, we're running for the Oscars. Everyone's active. So which obviously has a direct impact on the performance of the department with the amount of acting DG and DGGs, deputy directors. So if you could... the DG, if he could, or the acting DG, if you could just give us some indication of all the deputy director posts that are vacant or acting, and go along the organogram for us so we can help as members of parliament, and give us an indication of how long these positions have been vacant, because if you look at the annual report, you're supposed to fill these positions within 3 months, right? Which I don't think has been done. And if you could give us some indication of why those positions haven't been filled within 3 months as well. Okay, page 39. Sorry, Chair, I'm just going to the pages. Page 39. The appeals, yes. This is to do with the appeals adjudication process for social security policy development. And it says percentage of appeals adjudicated within 90 days. And you mentioned that in the presentation where you said 50% of appeals must be dealt with within 90 days. However, last year's report says 90% have to be dealt with in 90 days. So what's the justification for the reduction of 40% year on year? Thanks. And then also if you can give some indication about, it goes with slide 7, I suppose, funding to NPOs. There's been a lot of... unpleasantness, I suppose, from the NPO sector with regards to how little funding they get for statutory services that the government is supposed to provide, but they're doing it on behalf of government, and the fact that government isn't providing services. And I'll give you enough money. And I'll give you one example. When I recently went to some old age homes in the Northwest, Northern Cape, and the Free State, I mean, the different subsidies from each province is quite stark. I mean, the Northern Cape, I think, was the lowest, was 955 rand per person, and Northwest had 2,750 rand. So it's like a three times difference. So, I mean, so are we looking at having conditional grants for these kinds of services? Because what happens is with the equitable share, provinces use it for what they like, quite frankly. So if you could just give some indication about that. And then page 43, it's on the scholarship program, which is on page 43 of this report. We've said how many it's great how many people are having social worker scholarships. But how many of them actually being employed, and what's being done to ensure that they are absorbed into each province? Because we've had problems last year and this year where graduates were not absorbed into the provinces. So it's one thing giving someone a scholarship, but it's another thing that they can't find a job at the end of the day. Chair, we're going to have two rounds, or not? Or must I try and get everything in at once? Okay, I'll make this the final for now. Then just on the people with disabilities, on page 45 of this report, we were supposed to have a draft bill last year tabled according to the previous year's report, and that hasn't been met. Why not? And what's going to be done about that? Why haven't we had that draft bill for people with disabilities? Thank you, Chair. I'll continue the second round. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Now, on the youth program part, it is taken by the Honourable Member, but I just want to further ask the question to say, are the very same programs will be intended to go down to the district after it has been covered all the provinces, because I believe that it will be go straight to the provinces. But the question is now, are they from the provinces will be going down to the district? Same, will go to the Gwanda program sites. That it's just a clarification to say, those sites will also be decentralized from provinces to district as well. To the food bank. And the second question will be, which institutions that offer community development qualification? The reason is that there are very few. In our areas, you don't even see them. You don't even know if they are there at all. I think we would be advising the department to have at least more of them than maybe the social workers, because social workers, they have to go and study a long time, and then this one maybe can have short courses that will assist the community. I'm saying this because when you get to those areas where we stay, we're not from township or from the rural areas, you'll discover that every morning there are people sitting in your sitting room coming to complain about this and that, and then you ask yourself, where are these people who are called community development practitioners or whoever is leading in the area? And also the department services for the military veterans. I would like to know where are these centers maybe in which province, so that whenever we go to these provinces, we can see that really something has been done there, because national can do all the documents and everything, but the proper implementation of this. Policies and plans is not really what the department wants them to be. And also they are trying to NGOs. One would ask, why is it that still today we are talking of poor service delivery? If they are there for the people, if they are trained. Now, if they are trained by the officials, do the officials get a quality training so that they can transfer it to those people down there? Because you can see people are being funded by the department. People are misusing the money. People are fighting against each other with the funds given by the department. So you don't actually know how do these people get the grant or the funding. Were they trained? Do they know what they're supposed to be doing? And I would like also the department to assist us with the number of unfilled funded posts, as in now, so that we can say the amount that is listed there is going to cover maybe or what have you. But the last one is in slide 15. It has got compensation, capital 1%, transfers 1%, goods and services 46%. I would like a clarity there, Madam, because really, when I'm looking at the compensation for the employees, it's more than the goods and services rendered. I don't know. Can you just give me clarity on that? Thank you.
Thank you. you, Honorable Puma. Just for two questions. The one is, the two questions are in that sense. First of all, I'm sure we're all happy that you won the appeal on the SASA adjudication process and in the process. I saw an ad advertisement over the weekend in the newspaper, I think it was on Friday, in the New Age, around SASA beneficiaries, but actually those that received the grant via the bank, they can now contact CPS, the service provider, to have their pension paid into the bank accounts. Just on the communication side of things, whether you're also having that kind of communication outreach to the beneficiaries everywhere in the country, you know, at community level. Because to me that is very important to know that that people when they go into government offices or anywhere where they open their rural daily, they would find it there, you know. So what kind of communication campaign have you embarked on to make them aware that this is what they can do? That is the one issue. The second issue I wanted to raise was is there a real or significant growth in the accessing of the care dependency grant? I see that the baseline allocation have increased significantly. Over the MTF period, and is there an outreach to the disability sector? You know, when you look at the presentation, there's very little about disabled people. If the department could reflect on what are they doing in terms of the responsibility towards the disabled sector, because you hear about women and children and so on, but people with disabilities, nothing really. What are you doing? Because I think that is a sector that is really not given a lot of attention to. I know we have a ministry, but that ministry is basically just monitoring and evaluation. Then I'm glad to see that the expenditure on the appeals adjudication will also increase to speed up the adjudication of appeals. So that I think is good news to especially our beneficiaries out there and our grant applicants. Just on the scholarship program, just to refresh the committee's memory in terms of, I think, I don't know whether it was Honourable Moore or Honourable Water that asked that question. What is the ultimate goal? We all know, I think, with the children's access, we needed 60,000. This country needs 60,000 social workers. Yeah, 60. Yeah, 66,000. That's ideal, right? But in terms of the scholarship program, what is our original target? Are we working towards a special target to make an impact and a dent? And I'm very much interested to know whether all those social workers, graduates, I'm sure that you had a failure rate, people fall out along the way. Every day you have social workers leaving, generic social workers take up managerial positions. It happens. So how many of these graduates, because besides the national scholarship program, you also have provincial scholarships. I don't know whether you have that data, but how many of them have been absorbed, which means it then should make a difference at the end of the day, because this program has been coming on for quite some time. Thank you. Over to you, Acting DJ.
Thank you very much, Chair. We would upfront request really that members do assist us in instances where they feel that their questions have not been fully attended to through our responses. So there's quite a lot of questions that we have received. Chair, as we always do, I'm with the team here from the department, and we will then request that DDG is responsible for the different pillars of the department would respond to the questions accordingly, and then I'll take those really that are directly for the Office of the Director General. Just to say, Chair, to start with the two comments you made on Gwanda and the food bank, we would look up to the committee to extend an invitation to ourselves to come and do those presentations to the committee, and we'll prepare accordingly for that. Now, the question that was raised on issues around social crime prevention and victim empowerment program, that as a department there are certain expectations that are there, including reporting into Parliament vis-a-vis our progress and the kind of impact that we're having in the sector. As members are aware, the Department of Social Development is part of the JCPS cluster, and our work is largely at that level. But in order to provide a detailed clarification on the issues that were raised, I'm going to ask Ms. Connie Nimalo, who is currently our Acting Deputy Director General of Social Welfare Services, to provide a response to the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. I will start with the one for submitting reports to Parliament around the area of social sexual offences. Honorable Chair, I need to indicate that not that the Department was not submitting reports. We used to submit it via Department of Justice because they consolidate a report. However, we have since learned that we are expected to submit a separate report. This year, we are going to still give the Department of Justice our report that is en route, but also we're going to present it as an individual department to Parliament as per requirement. This was a confusion of interpretation of that clause because it's the same clause that is within the Child Justice Act. But with the Child Justice Act, we submit it consolidated with the Department of Justice. The second question was around the scholarship. I think if I can start with the numbers, yes, we are working towards 66. I think even the National Development Plan has a number similar to that. However, we are also saying we need to review our ratio in terms of the numbers we need. We have finalized the ratio now. That will tell us exactly what numbers, because that 66 is just based on Children's Act. We have other legislations, we have other programs that we need to make sure that we have enough social workers to attend to those challenges. So once we finalize the ratio, we'll have a number that will assist us in terms of the correct numbers that we need. However, for the current scholarship, we're working towards 66,000. I must indicate that since the scholarship started, we had dropouts of 476 students who registered and dropped, could not finish. And also we've got a number of students who have been, like 6,339, who have been extended, are failing, but they are prepared to continue with the program to qualify and graduate as social workers. In terms of absorption, since the scholarship started, in 2008 we absorbed 806, 2009 we absorbed 1,244, 2010, we absorbed 1,177. 2011, 444. For the 2012, we have not yet, I think when the CFO presented, there was a special allocation that was granted for social development to absorb the number of graduates that were graduating, I think, from the 2013. So provinces have already absorbed all students that were that have graduated using the special allocation from Treasury. However, I need to indicate that there are students that are waiting for their results. They were supplementing. So I don't have that number now, but I can look for it before we finish the session to give the committee.
Yeah. Just stop you there.
Mm.
In 2011, how much was the number? What was
that? 2011, there were 444, 444.
Sorry?
444.
444. And you have a target of 66,000 social workers.
Yes.
How many social workers do we have now, with, including the graduates? I mean, if I look at the total, it's 3,000 that went through the system, graduated through the scholarship program, right? Do you have a target of 66? How many practicing social workers do we have out here, in the field?
The current social workers in the field are more than 6,000 that are in the field. However, Chair, maybe I can also indicate the scholarship awards since it started until now so that we can see the numbers as the trend is growing. In total, since the scholarship started, we have awarded 8,565 scholarships. Then I can break it per year if that's what the committee needs. Firstly, in 2007 and 8, it was 1,428. Scholarships awarded. We have not subtracted the dropouts there, the failure rates. It's just the numbers that we given that we gave on 2007-8. Then 2008-9, it was 1,462. 2009-10, it was 1,310. In 2010 and 11, it was 1,410. In 2011 and 12, it was 918. In 2012-13, it was 2,037.
I think what is very important, because we've got six, as a country, we have 6,000, we have 8,000, 6,000 social workers. And out of the 8,000 scholarships, 3,000 have graduated so far. That is not even, we're not considering the intake for 2012. 13 those that have, which is fair. So we've done fairly well with the scholarship. But if you look at the target, I mean, we all have died, gone to heaven. I'm sure that's where we're going to go. And our kids will be taken over, and still we won't have the target of 66,000. Am I correct with that assumption? So we then need a better alternative. In terms of your social auxiliary workers, don't you? Is there any plans in the department in terms of learnership through the EPWP program to strengthen or to complement the shortage? Because You need social work, all the probation services and a range of other services. So is there any extra effort to look at social auxiliary workers, bring them into the system also? Because otherwise you need to adjust your target. Your target is not realistic, unless you say it's for the next 50 years. That's your target going to be. If you have 3,000 over four financial years, when are you going to have 66,000? 40 years. Yeah. Honorable Mora?
On the same point, I just want to be sure that I heard well. Acting interesting. You're saying that, okay, maybe let's take year 2008. Year 2008, you awarded 1,462 scholarships. Okay, I'll wait for you. And then, but people who graduated is 806. I'm concerned, Chairperson, when I do my mathematics, we've got 656 people who, I'm not sure, probably failed or some are part of the extension. So it means there's a huge problem in terms of maybe support or whatever, but it will be interesting to know what is the department doing with this. I mean, I don't want to say high failure rate until we know exactly what happened to the 656. And when you look in 2011 as well, the department had 918 scholarships awarded, and only 444 people graduated. So we've got 474, you know, people either failed or, you know, part of extension. Maybe can we have this, report in terms of, you know, a full report that shows since the scholarships started so that we see exactly what is happening. We have a clear picture of how many extensions, how many failure, because, I mean, if people are getting scholarships and they're failing, you know, something needs to happen. Because, like you said, we won't reach that 66, which is supposed to actually only help with the Children's Act, not even everything. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, when I was at varsity many moons ago, first a professor said to us, a private law professor, welcome. Yes, we were over 1,000 in the lecture hall. He said by the end of the course, there will be less than a third of you remaining. He was a real motivator. So there's always a high turnover first year, as I can say that to you in terms of experience. That is a reality you can't run away from. But you're right, maybe lessons learned, that should be one of the lessons learned. Should there be an orientation program and whatever support, not just from social development side, but also from the universities and the institutions. And obviously the issue of personal responsibility that some would like to run away from, that is also there. That is also an issue in terms of responsibility of the person receiving the scholarship. So I think, Mrs. Mumalo, can you just hold back on that? I just want to give Honourable Mafolo just a opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is, I'm just worried about the dropout. Does the department have something in place to say that so that we don't close opportunities for other people? Do they enter there only if they can find a better job? They drop out and just leave. Do the department have something on place to say if you are taking this course, that means you'll have to, because there are people who are willing. I think the failure are better than the dropouts, because the failure shows commitment and want to continue with the course. But what about the other people, and how do they do after those dropouts? Do they replace, or it's just finished? Thanks.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think the challenge of the dropouts is students failing and just leaving university. Some of them, there are very few who divert to other professions. However, they sign a contract when we award scholarships in terms of what we expect from them. Number one, if you fail, we don't fund you the following year. You have to fund yourself, and then we take over the other year. So some students find it very difficult to fund the year that they have failed to repeat. As a result, they end up leaving. However, recently we have decided to look at situation of students, because some of them are orphans. They don't have means to say, if we extend your studies, for instance, I indicated a number, plus or minus 6,000, they are on that extended period. To say you have failed, we're giving you one extra year to be able to finish. But if you don't finish, then we cannot be able to proceed with the scholarship program. That's what we can do up to now. I want also to deal with the issue of social auxiliary work, Honorable Chair. I think it's one area that we also need to strengthen, because in terms of social workers, we know the universities indicated they can only take a particular capacity based on their number of lectures and the number of classes. So even if we had more money, they are saying to us, we can only train so many at a particular given time. So that's the other challenge that we've got. In terms of social auxiliary workers, we have field posts of 2,548. Also, as social auxiliary workers, they terminate, they divert to other professions. We have 24 that have terminated services. However, we have vacant posts of 173 that we're still going to fill to support the social workers that are currently employed. I think I need to agree with honorable members that we need to submit a full. We do have a full report. I have it with me that we can provide to the committee so that they can see from the start of the scholarship until now in terms of the status and the failure rate and the dropouts and the vacancies and the impact of OSD also in the area of social work scholarship program. The other one was the funding of NPOs in terms of old age home. What I can say is that the policy on financial awards has been finalized. We also finalized the costing models. We're now busy with National Treasury finalizing the funding model. This will alleviate the problem of differentiation in provinces, because currently it's true that each province now is funding using its own costing model. So now we have a national costing model, and we are finalizing a funding model with a national treasurer to be able to ensure uniformity in terms of funding in provinces. So that will be resolved in the medium term. The disability bill, yes, last year it was not drafted. We're finalizing the policy because we informed that we have to revisit the policy, considering the UN Convention, to be able to draft a bill this year. So this year we're ready to draft the bill. Last year we could not draft it because the policy itself was not approved by the presidency. So they said you cannot draft a bill when the policy is not ratified or endorsed by the policy unit within the presidency to be able to inform your bill. Then the next. I'm not sure if I left something. I'll come back if I've left something for now.
When you look at the allocation in terms of substance abuse and youth, why is there a reduction in the baseline allocation over the MTF period?
Can we?
And children, yeah.
May we on that particular one, Chair, and Mr. Modiba, you could come in with a further point. We have the ENE estimate of national expenditure for the MTF period. The reduction that you see there in terms of allocation really relates to several things. The first is obviously the utilization of historical data, i.e. National Treasury looks at the sorts of things that we've been using the money on. So what has happened with particularly older persons, youth, and substance abuse is that it's really an issue of efficiency savings. If you look at the actual ENE, it relates to issues like venues, the utilization of venues by the department. It relates to things such as advertising, which will include promotional materials and those kind of things that would be utilized when we're having conferences and the like. It also relates to the fact that other things like subsistence and travel, those really are the non-core aspects of our programs where the reductions are actually at. So the core function, i.e., which is policy development in these areas, as well as assisting provinces in the implementation of the policies that are developed by the department, actually remains. Mr. Madiba, any further say points to add on that?
Thanks, Acting DG. I think the efficiency saving exercise was necessitated by the cabinet approval that all departments should embark on identifying areas where they can, you know, identify savings over the MTF, and then all departments were expected to identify the 1% reduction, 2% reduction, 3% reduction over the MTF, you know, through the mean combat, you know, exercise. So I think that is where it's actually coming from. Thanks.
Chair, the other area in which we received quite a number of questions on is really on the non-profit organization, the non-profit sector. Needless to say, before one makes further comments around NPOs and what is happening, is really the appreciation that as we speak right now, we're in a point and phase where we are completely reevaluating as well as reconstructing the kind and type of relationship that we want to have with NPOs, including the issue of resourcing them, as well as an ongoing interface between us and the NPO sector. Now, and also even the Act itself, because the department right now, as I speak, whilst it expects that NPOs provide annual reports and financial statements, the monitoring thereof is not really at the level and extent to which we would want it to be at. So generally speaking, the questions around monitoring and registration, so questions of if we are not monitoring, how are we making sure that NPOs are indeed carrying out the commitments that we agree with them, and also the important issue as well, which was raised, i.e., if some of these services are statutory, i.e., government is expected to be responsible and discharge those various services, what then becomes of the issue of funding them? Now, right now, we're working with NPOs to try and do the following. If we fund them 100%, they become us. They become government, i.e., we'll then have to dictate to them each and everything that they do, because they'll just be as good as civil servants, because they become clearly an extension of government. However, that doesn't mean we're running away from the challenge of, this is something Ms. Nomalo has already alluded to, standardizing, i.e., if we're talking about older persons in the Eastern Cape and we're talking about government subsidization of that kind of service, it ought to be uniform and the same across the board. So those are the sorts of things that we're still really applying our minds very, very strongly on. And I would like yourself, Mr. Nechpale, particularly to talk about the sorts of issues that have come up regarding currently the ministerial task team, after the dialogues, after the summit, and the sorts of key areas that we are looking at in trying to streamline and make our work as best as it can be in this area. Mr. Nechpale, please, if you can add.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson and members. In the issue of the answers on the issues of NPO monitoring, I think there are two types of monitoring that is inherent in terms of the NPO sector. The other one relates to how a non-profit organization will ensure that its governance is in order by providing the department, in terms of the NPO Act of 1997, providing reports back to National on an annual basis, which ensures that that non-profit organization is still alive, is still operating. With that, it is a very silent approach of monitoring, where you look at whether the NPOs have submitted reports, whether the NPOs have submitted both annual and narrative reports, and they will report that. And this is the area where a lot of NPOs are not complying. But following the NPO summit that we had last year, there were a lot of issues that they raised, we are at the stage where the resolutions and the action plan has been developed in all the areas that has been in to assist NPOs to report back. The other is the issue of the duplication between reporting for financial purposes where you are funded and reporting back on based on the NPO NPO Act requirements. And I think we are going this financial year to ensure that we go back to those NPOs to educate them, make them aware about the issues that they need to adhere to in terms of NPO governance and the compliance to the NPO Act, of which we are in the process during this financial year. The other issues that were raised by members relate...
Mr. Chifaka, could we highlight the five critical areas that we're working on with the NPOs, the ones that are part of the ministerial task team?
The areas that have been identified from the NPO summit that we had, one issue was looking at the NPO registration, where in the regulatory framework is so stringent, and I think that's on their complaint, that we should ensure that the regulatory framework that we have, the NPO Act, the forms and others, are easily are also available in all nine languages, and that the registration process is done quick and fast. There should not be any delays. With that, that's one area. The second one was the issues of NPO funding, and I think Ms. Numalo has mentioned the development of the funding models and then the policy and financial award implementation discussion with Treasury, that there were a serious complaint in terms of the resource mobilization, that a lot of NPOs that are in the rural areas are not accessing funding, whereas that's where the services are. And in that areas, there are some resolutions that we are already discussing. Third issue was issue of the transformation amongst the NPOs. You still find in different areas NPOs that are racially based, especially the home, the old age homes that admit clients based on their ethnicity or race. So those are the issues of transformation that we deal with. And this resolution in terms of how we need to deal with together with the sector. The other area is the issue of the 10-point plan, that NPOs, when they register, they need to look at addressing a comprehensive approach of dealing with the citizens' plight, citizens' problems that leads to poverty, inequality, that also relates to service delivery, that leads to relates to children services. So even on those issues, a resolution was taken that I think it will come to this forum once it's finalized. The other area is the last one is the issue of capacity building. They raise a very serious issues about that we are registered, but we don't have necessary capacity. And I think as a department that we've taken a hit off, and a plan has been developed. The NDA has been mandated together with the department to begin to implement capacity building program for NPOs, especially the CBOs that are in the most rural area of the country. So I think though those resolutions and the program of action relates to all five areas that have been listed, and both are going to be done comprehensively together with others that we done by visiting provinces. We are going to take back to Treasury, especially on the issue of resource mobilization, that the welfare sector is very scarcely funded. There's very little funding, and a lot of NPOs are not accessing funds on the ground. Thank you.
If one can continue, Chair. The next question that I'm going to look at is the one that was already raised about the acting in the department. May I start by saying the following, Chair, that as the senior management of the department, both DG and DDGs, the posts of DDGs and the Director General are entirely and completely the prerogative of the political head of the department, i.e. the minister. A minister will decide when those jobs are advertised, when the interviews are held, and who the people are selected to those various particular positions. However, what I'm going to do here is just to give the status quo as it is, without necessarily committing myself, nor the senior management of the department, in terms of the selection process and the decisions that are indeed made. But nonetheless, I think there is a useful update that I can make in that regard. First, in the department, traditionally, we've always had the Director General with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positions at Deputy Director General level. Now, as things stand, we have the Acting Director General, and that is Mr. Totego Phakade. The interviews for the Director General position were held, and the understanding is that an appointment and a person assuming the position will be indeed within the next 30 days, within the next month. But what is important is that interviews were held. Now, the other position that is there in the Department of Social Development is the position of Deputy Director General responsible for social welfare services. That position was held by Dr. Maria Mabetwa, who retired from the department at the end of last year, as in December 2012. Currently, the person who is acting in that position is Ms. Connie Nxumalo, who is Chief Director, Welfare Services. Now, again with that position, interviews were held, and the finalization then of the successful candidate is, if I could use that phrase, in the process of being finalized. And then we then have the position of Deputy Director General Integrated Development. That is the position that used to be occupied historically by our Chief Executive Officer who went to the NDA. And acting in that position is the gentleman on my right, Mr. Peter Neshibale. And again, for that position, interviews were held on around the same week, really, that the one for welfare services was held. So one is indeed expecting appointments to be made in that position very soon. Now, Deputy Director General, Comprehensive Social Security, used to be occupied by Mr. Solon Jahoma, who resigned from the department last year. I think that was around October. And the position was advertised. The shortlist has not been done. And the same applies as well to the position of Chief Operations Officer, which was occupied by Mr. Zane Dango, who was appointed by former Minister of Social Development, Minister Edna Molewa, who made him to become her advisor. And when Minister Bathabile Dlamini took over as full minister, she also continued with Mr. Zane Dango as her current advisor. So it is true that if you talk about a substantive position in the department, I am the only Deputy Director General who is in his substantive position that is not acting in, and that is DDG Social Policy. So in short, really, DG position interviews held, we expect an appointment to be made. DDG Welfare Services interviews held, we expect an appointment soon. DDG Integrated Development interviews held, we expect appointments to be made. Comprehensive Social Security advertised, Chief Operations Officer advertised.
The positions of finance, DDG Finance, as well as corporate services, what are they DDG positions or not? And if so, can you elaborate on those things?
I do think Honourable Member is quite correct to raise that particular one. I should have raised it as well. Currently, our acting DG, Mr. Phakade, is our Chief Financial Officer. So when the Director General's position became vacant when Mr. Matanzela left to go to cooperative governance. Our then Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Phakade, was then appointed as acting DG. And since the 1st of April, the appointment as acting DG was extended by a further 6 months. We have Mr. Johnny Modiba as the acting Chief Financial Officer currently. I hope that addresses the Honourable Member's question. Corporate services, I will be in the Department of Social Development for 7 years come end of September this year. We've never had a position of DDG Corporate Services. However, in the newly approved organogram, the intention is to appoint a person into that position. But historically, we've never had it, and we've generally had Chief Director, Human Resources Management, reporting directly to the Director General. We've had the Chief Director, Communications, reporting directly to the Director General. We've had Chief Director, Legal Services, reporting directly to the Office of the Director General. And also, yes, quite correct. Thank you for reminding. And the Chief Director responsible for information technology, our Chief Information Officer, reporting also directly to the Director General. We still have more questions. If this one has been exhausted, Chair, and as I did say, really, that the best placed person, really, to I think, to respond to the questions really of DDG and DG appointments is the Minister of the Department of Social Development. Now, there was a question that came up about the fact that when it came to appeals, last year we targeted 90% of appeals being processed within 90 days, and that's been revised downwards to 50%. Now, the long and short of that really is the following. First, as we speak, there were lots of social grant applications that were being subjected to a review process, to adjudication. In other words, what's basically happening is the following. An application is made. A person is not successful, they immediately go for adjudication. So in order to offset the huge numbers of appeals that SASA was receiving, that the Department of Social Development was receiving, SASA then developed an internal review process, i.e., before the applicant appeals an adjudication, they request an internal review undertaken by SASA in order to address the kind of huge numbers. And then with that internal process, it is really about just ensuring that there aren't any doubts about the decision that SASA had made. So there's that internal review process that SASA has in place now. Now, the revision downwards, when appeals started, we were over-optimistic. That's basically the point and issue, in terms of wanting to deal with appeals that have got to be adjudicated within 90 days. We did not consider the challenge and problem of access to documents. Now, if you are adjudicating if you have to adjudicate an appeal, the adjudicator has to have in front of her exactly the same documents, exactly the same case as was presented to SASA, without any material change coming about in that kind of regard. So in our estimation that we'll be able to deal with 90% of them within 90 days, the challenge that we did have really was the issue of access to documentation coming both from the applicant themselves and within our own document services within the department. And I would very much also would like Ms. Virginia Peterson, the CEO of SASA, to even, you know, shed even better light on this before I move on to the other question. Please, Ms. Peterson, if you will.
I think the actual process of the review and
it takes a period as well. So if you look at the two concurrent processes, there's no way, if we're looking at it, almost simultaneously the person drops off a letter, because their clients also have to be educated, and it's our responsibility, all of us as a collective, in the process. They're literally trying to duplicate the process. So you'd find the delay in the secondary process, which is appeals. But I think as we've gone through the re-registration, better filing system, we should be able to get back. But my point is still, it's a duplicate process, and we need to ask ourselves quite fairly. Do we need both? Sorry. It's a policy discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. The other question that we were asked was really on youth programs. First, we were asked that youth programs are going to be in three provinces. Which are those provinces? Those provinces are the Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. Those are the three provinces that the youth programs are currently being initiated on. And then the question of whether, with regards to youth programs, is the intention to go down to districts? Absolutely. That is really... Currently, we have been trying to develop models, testing if these models work before we escalate and massify them and extend them to every corner of the country. That's really been the idea of this. So we are definitely going to the local level in a very, very strong way. The same as well with Gwanda. Gwanda was really intended to be a national lesson, that the whole country looks at this innovative way of community mobilization and hopefully getting community organizations to emulate it and do it in their own neighborhood. That was really the idea. It was really a model, as you did see, the sorts of things that happened with Gwanda, people addressing problems of crime in their communities, people addressing the care and treatment of old parents, older persons who were living by themselves, and oftentimes there was one case where a very, very old lady was living with even a disabled child. So it was really intended to be a showcase of the sorts of things that communities can be able to do themselves, with the idea that provinces adopt it, again, as a model for community mobilization at both the province as well as district level. Food banks. Honorable Member Guma, this is a very, very fair question. Our footprint on food banks currently is urban. And we're very much aware of that shortcoming, very, very much aware of that shortcoming. However, it is really the issues of convenience and logistics that have made us to be present in Durban, in Johannesburg, in Port Elizabeth, which really are the major cities. Quite correctly, those very food banks are very, very far from the poorest areas where our people live in. However, having said that, those very same foods that are housed and stocked in the in the food banks that are in the urban areas do, in many instances, reach those very same rural areas. Not to the extent and scale that we want to. So currently, if you look at our plans for the current financial year going forward, the idea is that more food banks are established in rural areas. That's really the idea. They are actually, honorable member, they are part of our food security program, which is, as you would, I think, appreciate, intensifying our presence in rural areas. And then honorable member also raised the issue of community development and the conflict that goes on there when people are funded and you find that it's fighting that goes on. Are these people properly trained? Most of the time, yes, they are properly trained, but there are always dynamics between groups. The NDA are today experts, really, in what works and what doesn't work when it comes to setting up these community-level groups for economic activities. And the CEO of the NDA could definitely be able to expand and elaborate for us as to what really are the sorts of issues that do arise. Because there has been instances where government funds cooperatives, where government funds groups and communities, but what then happens is that whilst government is there to do the work with those groups, the groups collapse and they collapse because of internal conflict. Mrs. Vieira, please, if you can, Dr. Ntlapo, please just add your experiences of the NDA in that regard.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Indeed, as the acting DG indicates, that when we work closely with the community groups in terms of supporting them on various programs, some of these projects, they do collapse for a number of reasons. And the reasons, some of the reasons are others have conflicts amongst themselves in terms of managing the funds that are allocated to them. We've had experiences where the funds that are transferred to these groups are mismanaged. We've had instances where the projects collapse because of capacity issues, and hence we have identified the area of capacity building as an important area in terms of strengthening these projects. So those are some of the reasons why you find that there are challenges within these projects. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
And just to continue on that one as well, Honorable Member had asked questions around the training of community development practitioners. I think what we could do there really is to avail a whole list of accredited service providers that provide that kind of training, so that it can readily be available even for members in the various communities that
The visibility of community development workers in community. The fact that they've come to public representatives and she doesn't get the sense, Honourable Gomez, if I'm representing her, that there wasn't, there's no visibility of community development workers in communities. And we're talking not just the local government ones, but the CDWs, but the community development worker from social development, which is in this case now provincial competence.
And also, Chair, what is actually quite important as well, it's really about the model that we're using. Because in the very same community where you're talking about community development workers, there are also community development practitioners, there are health development workers. Recently, there's NARISEC, National Rural Youth, NARISEC, Youth Corps. And added to that as well are many child and youth care workers that go to the same household, auxiliary social workers, etc. So we really have this very, very long list of different social services professionals as well as community development workers of different caps going into the same communities and things. It's really just about also refining the kind of model that we are utilizing as government. Chair, the last point really to raise is really about the interest in terms of the vacancy rate in the department. Our latest figures are really the following. Our vacancy rate currently is at 10%, if you're talking senior management services, SMS. And we have vacancies for 14 directors, 6 chief directors, and as I mentioned earlier, 3 DDGs that whose posts still need to be filled. And one DG post, yes. Honourable Members, thank you very much. I do think that at least according, and there are questions that are addressed specifically to SASA, which were about communication and care dependency grant, and as well as other things that I'm sure Ms. Peterson did take note. But on our side for now, unless members do have further probing that they do want, that's how we handle it. Thank you.
Honourable Peterson.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I think in terms of communication, we are using community radios, pamphlets, local newspapers as well. We're really trying to get to our people, but we still also know that somewhere in that deep rural area we might have missed it. So we are making sure that stakeholders, churches, in fact, you and your card, which is our little pamphlet, we thought we had printed sufficiently. We've had to actually have a rerun because it's been the most sought after little booklet because it tells them how to use the card, tells them if they, you know, did more than three times and how to get back and so on. So we will continue to communicate, but also in the languages, we're not just using the community radios. We're having translation services do it in the languages of choice because I think it is important that people understand they have to ring the number. We will obviously activate voice once we finish doing all our processes, but until then, in order to get that. In terms of care dependency, I think a slight overprojection, 158,000 is the projection. That speaks to about 16,000. If you look at the actual take-up, it was like 1,400 in 2010-11, 2,800 across the country during the 2011-12 year. So you don't see, so we've got to obviously try and bring that projection in line. We've also decided this year to actually go out a lot more, not that we haven't. Our outreaches have been quite intense, but to specifically focus on certain areas where we feel there's an under recovery. We've talked the children's number, but we will also look at this number to see is that in line with the health stats on children who require 24-hour care, because that's what the care dependency grant demands, not just that you have a disability as a child, but that you require 24-hour care. And that's the distinction, because we have lots of children with various disabilities, whether it's visual, hearing, etc. But this is because of the care paradigm. That is why it's given. So it is a bit restrictive, because we've tried people trying, if the child is deaf, the child's in a special school, you know, there have been those issues. But that, again, is a policy concern, how we define a child. This is for total care, and that's why we give this call. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you very much. I think we've exhausted the questions, the response of the questions. Okay. Honorable Bowman, Honorable Waters, have been not concluding.
Well, thank you so much, Chair. The question of slide 15, I believe, of the compensation of employees. The 52%, I just wanted clarity on that. And whilst the CEO of Fusasa was still answering us, there is just one or two things that I wanted to ask. The small, the SRD question, it has been a question for a long time, to say people are getting SRD for a month, and yet the department is saying the person must get the SRD for 3 months, up to 6 months if the condition or financial condition hasn't changed. So we just need clarity on that, because when you go out there, you have to give people what exactly the department is saying, not say your own thing. And also the call center department of social development. People are complaining that the call center, they call and call and call the number when they want to report their things, and it doesn't answer. If it answers, they will be told to hold for a long time. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Bula, Honorable Bula, no, I've overlooked you in the first round. I do apologize. I'll give over to Honorable Waters, and then you can conclude with your questions. Honorable Waters?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the department for their responses. I don't want to disappoint the department, so I do have a question on the Child Protection Register, because I'm sure they were waiting for one. The report says that you're going to screen 30,000 people. Could you give us some indication in what field these people are? Are they teachers or nurses or doctors or whatever the case would be? And what you're going to screen them against? Because you're going to screen them against the names that appear on the register for unfit people. And, you know, that figure fluctuates between 1 and 400, depending on who you speak to and what day of the week it is. So can you give us some indication how many people are actually on the register currently. Then as far as the amendment to the Children's Act, what amendments are you bringing to, or are you anticipating bringing to the portfolio committee, to Parliament? And then lastly, Chair, just on the green paper on families, or the white paper actually, I see in the report they said they're going to be implementing at the department, but we haven't actually engaged, and I know it's probably an internal matter, but when will we be engaging in the white paper on families, before the implementation by the department? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. I think that the questions have been adequately addressed. But you know, Chair, whilst the discussions were going on, there was this glaring thing that was coming out that, you had to deliver services through a particular program. And whilst the notion that programs and policies were being drawn to deliver precisely to the mandate of particular programs, there seemed to be a gray area along that. But I think quite correctly, the monitoring and evaluation to evaluate the progress, the success rate of these programs, there has to be a detailed report in that aspect so that we would be able to look at. Chair, earlier on you brought the example of the social workers, and it was quite interesting. Then it went on to the NPOs. Now, it further goes on to see that certain programs we had a cut in our budgets. Now, how does that intertwine or correlate? We don't want to say that we require 6,000 social workers for a particular calendar year, yet we don't align that to the financial muscle and to the specific program that gives us the mandate to do that. So the other one that was came out strongly, and you just mentioned recently as well, the issue of the NPOs and the training and the youth and all of that. And mention was made about the mobilization of community development. And the targets were referred to about 200 wards. Now, I think that this might be a positive direction. What is the progress with regards to that? Because obviously, if you look at the war rooms in all these various wards that you're making reference to, there are all the departments, the various departments that are represented at this war rooms. Lastly, Chair, the issue about the integration of other departments. Are you unpacking or coming up with policies that also requires other departments to deliver with you concurrent with regard to a certain program? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let us start with let me maybe just start with the last point about integration between government departments. We are here for all of us just to make sure that South Africa, at the end of the day, delivers quality services, particularly to people that are ravaged by poverty. The issue of integration, Honourable Member, is a big challenge in government, and it's political. It's not a policy issue, it's not a technical issue, it's about the sorts of directives that one receives and gets from politicians. Currently within government, we do not share our budgets. We cannot fund the same set of activities within government. But having said that, though, if you look at areas such as early childhood development, the Department of Social Development cannot develop a curriculum. That curriculum to be developed for early child ACD practitioners is the responsibility of education. So we work quite well with them on particularly that kind of thing. We then are able to integrate in a way the sorts of things that we do. So there are specific particular areas where it becomes very important to work with other government departments. Honourable Member, SASA would not have reached the kind of successes it has reached if it did not have a very, very close working relationship with Home Affairs. particularly in terms of the issuing of birth certificates for children, as well as official documentation for caregivers of those very same children. But that is integration with a small I. You know, if we really want to talk big integration in government where there's alignment, where there's synergy, there's a lot of work that we still need to do. Included in that as well is the fact that really, if you look at how our government is structured in terms of the national and the provincial, as you do know, it's really based on cooperative governance rather than, you know, legally binding decisions that do kind of get taken. On the issue of NPOs, training, youth, community mobilization, war rooms, and all those other kinds of things, I would like Mr. Peter Neshipale here, who is the Acting Deputy Director General for Integrated Development, to further elaborate really on those kinds of matters and issues.
Thanks, Chair and members. I think in comprehensively, in the areas of NPOs, there is a need for a more robust approach of mobilizing the non-profit organizations in the small areas. We have planned what you call a roadshow. Following the dialogue that we have last year, one of the things that we identified is that at a district up to a ward level, we will be able to have what you call NPO forums, that those NPOs come together so that we could be able to give them more information and also give them a lot of what you call the crash course on how to manage their NPOs, their NPO sector. And this is done not necessarily from the Department of Social Development alone, but with the NDA as part of the its capacity building. Issues of community development and the war rooms and mobilization, we targeted the 1,300 wards that government have targeted. But I think we need to chew one chunk at a time. Each year we will take a certain number of wards that we need to target. Last year we targeted 300. This year we are targeting extra 200 wards, wherein we do the whole range of issues, which is profiling those communities, households, so that we can identify other issues that ranges from the poverty, malnutrition, lack of food, and to issues of child-headed household, and we put them in a register, which we call it the NISIS. So we that is something which at a national level we develop guidelines on how provinces need to go about area per area mobilizing those communities to identify those areas. And amongst it is an issue where we try to provide capacity to the communities. It's not an easy thing, but I think together with other governments like the local government, the wards, the ward committees, we engage with communities with the view that whatever is done within that community also feature into the IDP as part of the integration with other government department. In terms of the youth, we know we have got a major challenge about youth mobilization. We have started last year to do dialogues to identify the youth out of school so that we could have dialogues with them and mobilize them with the view of providing skills and also life skills. Generally, what you lack when you go out to community, you'll find that youth lack general life skills, either in the health or in the general respect, compatriotism. So what we do, we mobilize those youth. We also will have some of those that went to the camp last year going for a camp again this year, and again in December we'll choose others. So it's taking a chunk at a time, at an area at a time, but we hope that within our next 5 years we'll be able to have covered wide range of youth. We also do this not alone with Department of Health,
with Statistics SA and with also local Department of Local Government and the Department of Sports, so that we can together, if we put our energy together, we'll be able to do something for the communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I'll start with the white paper one. We are available on invitation to the committee to come share with them the final draft that is going to cabinet soon. And then the issue of the amendments. Yes, there are two proposed amendments. The first amendment really is basically minor changes to accommodate specific changes on Form 22, 23, 29, and we can provide that document. It's available even for second amendments, because that's where we want to ensure that provincial social workers are allowed to do adoptions and other sections that are critical even for child protection register. So I'll make available to the members the proposed document on the first amendments and second amendments. Then the child protection register, Part B. Yes, our target is 30,000. This 30,000 is based on the current number of applications we're receiving for screening for employment for people who should be screened and be certified whether they can work with children. However, also, I was trying to browse through my document here. I can't find it now, but I can provide more information in this area of work. Thank you, Chair. I don't have the number now, as I said, Honorable Chair, but I can provide even before we leave the session.
There was a last part that came from our Honorable Member, was looking at issues of monitoring and evaluation and budget reductions. Yeah.
Government has been very much criticized on the use of consultants. And the view really has been that government employs us at director level, chief director level, at deputy director general level, and yet the spend on consultants remains unacceptably high. The Department of Social Development has paid particular attention to that. So when you look at a reduction in allocation for a specific project, it's got to be understood in that kind of context, that we are now doing the work in many instances internally and ourselves. One department that is apparently very, very good at that is the Department of Science and Technology. But then it also conflicts somehow with the management model of government, that the higher a person goes, the less actual policy contact and contribution one tends to have. But definitely there is, if you look at our last financial year, for instance, quite a huge, saving that we made on allocations that were primarily directed at consultants. So it does not at all compromise the quality of our work and the things that we do on the ground for our various communities. Thank you.
Well, you don't do your own research, because then no one will be in the office. So I'm sure there is certain services that you have to outsource in terms of getting qualitative work. So we should also understand it in that context. Mrs. Peterson?
There was the question on SRD. Should I answer it? I think we must first look at the three methodologies applied in SRD. You have SRD given to undue hardship in the case of a disaster. So we would feed people in a hall, sort them out, and then when they go home, we would give them one food parcel. So that's a once-off. So I really want to make that clear. Then general SRD for undue hardship is 3 months, but people have to come and apply for it, because we need to make sure that the situation or the circumstances doesn't change. Then we have a program that addresses malnutrition and food insecurity with children, which we do together with health. That is for 6 months, where we'll supply the home and also spend time with the mother through other integrated programs, and they do exit after 6 months. So I think if we understand the different formatting for SRD, it's not a one-size-fits-all chair. Oh, and the other thing about the call center numbers, I just want to add to the members' numbers, because I'm sure they have the 0800-60-10-11, and then we have 0800-600-160, and then we have 012-400-2322. Those are three call centers intimately involved in SASSA's business. We've had to extend and expand numbers because of the volume. So we do have additional numbers, but I thought those three are the critical ones to assist members. Thank you, Chair.
The last question was from Honourable Member Tume, which is really about compensation of employees vis-a-vis goods and services, and our Acting Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Motiba, will handle that one, Chair. And that will be all from our side, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair, members, Tindiji. The slide I'm reflecting is basically, you know, part of the question that was asked to say the compensation of employees has increased from 307 to 340, about you know, 38 million, actually 32, somewhere there. And what is the reason for that? It's actually the twofold, and then the comparison between compensation of employees, you know, versus goods and services transfers, capital expenditure, in terms of this slide here that is actually presented. The reason is twofold. For the jump was actually a result of a special allocation by the National Treasury for us to beef up the internal audit unit. The about 8 million was allocated, you know, over the MTF, and it will continue in terms of us, you know, upgrading our internal audit unit for them to be able to exercise, you know, monitoring evaluation functions or audit also, you know, some of the activities that are happening at SASSA and NDA. So that was one of the reasons. The other reason of that increase is slightly because of what the acting DG has indicated in terms of us having identified certain savings, or especially on consultants. Some of the funds were actually then earmarked to beef up the new organizational structure that we have in the department, and be able to fill those positions that are critical and aligned to priorities that we're facing currently. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me thank the department for the presentation. I think it's been an engaging discussion from members. We've noted the issues, so that it's going to need further attention and an interaction, but also in terms of the reports that you will have to forward to us on the social workers, etc. The scholarship program. So thank you very much, Honourable Members, for meeting the chair.